Welcome to the Sexual Mindfulness Project podcast, where we talk about creating an intentional relationship and how to find joy in slowing down, letting go of judgment, and connecting more deeply with your partner. I'm Dr. Shalom Levitt, and today I'm here with Amber Price, Rebecca Clark, and Jenna Lawler. Welcome to our podcast today. We are going to be talking about sex with young children and how that looks and what sorts of things we should include. One question that we will start off with is, when do we start talking to our children about sex? What's the right age? Anybody have thoughts on that?
I think it's something that you start from the very beginning. And I think that that can make it more natural for the child and for you as a parent, that this is just something that we discuss as we go. And there are certainly lots of options when kids are little and seeing cousins be born or whatever. And we'll get into that more about how age level is an appropriate kind of information to share. But it should start early and it should start from the get-go.
I think it should start the moment that children can start talking. The moment that they learn how to talk, that's when, you know, you start reinforcing that positivity towards our bodies, because at that point, they're too young to really understand sexuality, but giving them a positive view towards our bodies really sets a foundation for then a positive discussion as they age towards sexuality and their sexual anatomy.
I love that, Jenna. In fact, I would even add that how we talk to them even before they learn to talk is setting this tone for what they think about their body.
I agree. And what I was going to clarify maybe though is that maybe you're not having a conversation about sexual intercourse at age 3, but you're willing to answer their questions and talk about their bodies and things. I think sometimes parents will say, well, what do I do when my 3-year-old is asking me questions that I don't think they're ready to learn about? And I think there's always an answer you can give. It may not be the full picture, but you can always honestly answer questions at their level. And I think then that you're building this foundation of trust and that they know that they can come to you with their questions and they're going to get a straight answer. And then that'll carry through their lives.
Yeah, that's perfect, Amber. I think that probably the most important thing we can do in setting a healthy foundation on the topic of sex with our very young children is to use the right terminology, use the vocabulary. And so that's one thing as parents, we might have to ask ourselves, are we comfortable saying penis and testicles and vagina and vulva? Or does that make us cringe a little? And if it does, we're going to have to do a little work on ourselves to get comfortable with those words. We know from research that children who are taught the right terminology for their body parts have a greater respect for their body. It's not this silly euphemism, you know, that someone made up and then kind of giggles about. They know that these body parts are respected and have a name. That's an important element of teaching our kids about sex.
And if we don't call them by their right name, I think it kind of adds some shame to it. If you can't call a penis and you call it a wiener or whatever, then you're not making up weird names for their nose or for their eyes. And so all of a sudden you've set this, oh, there's something weird or different or bad about that part of my body instead of it just being another body part.
Good point.
One of the more useful pieces of instruction that I received as a young mom to young kids was that if I wasn't comfortable pronouncing the words or saying the words, if I wasn't raised in a household that said the right terms for body parts, just to say it out loud to myself in the shower until it felt natural. Just sit there and say penis, 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 and sex, sex. And that actually worked. It was really helpful.
That's so good. You know, I think that if we have this comfortable tone with our young children, the rest is going to be smooth sailing because they will come to us. They will automatically feel like we're the authority and we're comfortable and not embarrassed to talk to them about any question they have. I love this story about a dad who was headed out on a business trip. He was really in a hurry because he was late getting to the airport. But right as he was walking out the door with his suitcases, his little 6-year-old daughter came up to him and said, "Dad, can you tell me where babies come from?" And he was like, "Oh, sweetheart, I really want to talk to you about this. I want to give you all the information, but I'm late to get to the airport." And when I get home, we'll talk about this in detail. And she said, "That's okay, Dad. You don't know anyway, do you?" I think it's interesting that when we put our kids off or we seem too busy to talk about these topics, when they come up, our kids dismiss our credibility on this topic.
Well, not only that, but when parents kind of make up stories, and when your three-year-old comes to you and asks you, "How are babies made? How did mommy have me?" And parents make up a silly story that is nonsensical. Children are smarter than we think they are, and they're going to pick up on that eventually. And that's going to reduce their trust in us. So being just straightforward with children, obviously being appropriate at their age level and their understanding, but just simply answering their question and being straightforward, that not only is going to reduce the shame about the subject, because if you're making up some silly story about how babies are made, it kind of gives them this sense of shame and, oh, this is something that we don't talk truthfully about. But if you address it and just say it as it is and don't be awkward or weird about it, then children are going to be like, "Oh yeah, that's how babies are made, you know," and then they're going to get over it. But they might have a negative reaction if you then are nonsensical about it.
It's a really good point. And I think that it kind of brings us into this next thought that a lot of parents are concerned about. What if my 4 or 5 or 6 year old asks about, you know, "What is sex? I heard that word. What is sex?" I think that one thing that we need to keep in mind, just like Jenna and Amber were both mentioning, we don't have to dive full into sexual intercourse. We can talk about, you know, when mom and dad love each other, we love to spend time with each other. We're very affectionate. And it's through our affection with each other, you know, depending on how old the child is, you give them a little bit of information. When mom and dad have that affection for each other, it's through that affection that we create a baby. And if that satisfies a 4 or a 5 year old, that's all the information they wanted. It's not until they're around 7, 8, 9 that we know developmentally they're ready to hear the complete story and details about sexual intercourse. And they need to, so that they're prepared for additional information that they need to be given when they're going through maturation. So it's important for us to answer their questions every single time they have them, but not overload them with information. Just answer the question simply. Then when they're developmentally ready around 7, 8, 9, we can give them all the information.
You know, the initial question about when do we start the conversations is important. And I think another really important element that you're touching on, Shalom, is that we have it whenever the occasion arises. And that can be a question from a child. But I also think it's important that we not necessarily wait around for a child to formulate a question and to verbalize a question. There can be great moments just throughout daily living that present us with an opportunity to talk about sexuality, intimacy, our bodies, the functions of our bodies, just as life unfolds. And I think that having your ear to the ground and being ready for that is important. I think if we are waiting until a child is quite a bit older or hits junior high, it's never too late to talk to your kids about sex. But I think better to have it just be part of the walk and talk of our home rather than we're going to have a big sit down event and you're never going to forget this. This will be seared into your memory because this will be the talk. I think just having it be part of how you talk about life, because it's how we relate to each other and it's such a big part of life. They can just understand it as a part of life.
Yeah, you know, from a gospel perspective, I would never sit my children down once in their life and have one talk on the atonement and then say, "Okay, good luck. Hope you figure everything out as you develop and mature in life." And it really is the same with talking about sexuality when they're little. We talk about very basic things. We answer their questions. We talk about how amazing their body is and how much they should respect it and how it heals and it's so powerful. We also talk about how we use our body. We don't hit. We use it for kindness. We show affection and love. So they're already getting these foundational ideas about how they will use their body. And then we can build on that. You know, we're using the right terminology. We're using a number of these foundational principles so that when we're ready to tell them all the details about sex, it almost seems just natural to them.
And I think a lot of times we have invitations, especially sometimes with media in terms of our daily lives and things that are going on with kids. And just like Shalom, you're talking about it from a relational perspective where we are teaching kids about intimacy and how it's appropriate to relate to each other. Media provides lots of opportunities to just have a parent explain, yeah, that doesn't seem like the right way that they should be acting toward each other, or that seems mean, or how does that seem to you? It seems harsh to me. And just talking kids through it and talking through, you know, kids see a lot of sexual behavior, even in tame programming, they'll see handholding and kissing, and using those opportunities to talk through what that means to us. I think your analogy to gospel principles is perfectly apt, where we take the chance to sort of embed and emphasize those lessons that we want them to learn. And we can be doing that with intimacy all along.
One really good example of how you're saying this opportunities to talk about this is all around us. I remember years back, I was taking my boys to school every day. And on our path, there was this billboard that was a woman pretty scantily dressed. And I remember for the first few times we passed it, I tried to distract their attention from it. Like, oh, don't look, you know, look somewhere else. And then I realized these sorts of messages are everywhere around them. I need to teach them how to process this and think about it with a proper attitude. And so I just asked him the question. I said, did you guys see that billboard? How did that make you feel? What do you think that said about women or about a relationship? And so we were able to just open up the conversation and talk about these messages that are all around our children.
Something I've been thinking about is that along with what you all have been saying, a lot of parents really want to preserve the innocence of their children while they're young, because obviously your kids are so little and they're adorable, and obviously you don't want them to have to be thrown into a world they're not ready for. But the reality is, sex is all around us. In songs, and I'm not a parent, but I've heard my nieces singing these songs and they don't even know what they're singing, but they're very sexually explicit songs that are on the radio and, you know, TV shows, ads, media is highly sexualized. And so to try to ignore those topics and try to keep your child's innocence, ignoring the subject isn't going to work in today's world. You have to address it, and you have to be that trusted figure that your children can turn to and kind of combat those messages that are being sent to kids at such a young age.
And that brings up one of my big thoughts about the sex talk and how we talk to our kids about sex. I think it's just so important that we stay as positive as possible, because like Jenna said, it is a scary world. And that world has a way of coming right into our homes, almost without us noticing. But when we can talk about and combat those messages with positive displays of affection between spouses and pointing out positive affection, like hugging your dad or whatever it might be, but just really being as positive, I think that might be one of the best antidotes to the scary and really negative media messages that we get, is just to show kids another way, that it's not something scary that we're going to be able to block out. That's my first line of defense, is like, turn it off, look away. But at some point, they're going to see it. And so I think if we can help them focus on the beauty of it and the fun of it, and even just our tone of voice, I think the sex talk, when we're talking about it, we can stay sacred, but we can have joy in our voices as we talk to our kids about it. It doesn't need to be a scary, somber, you might die if you touch this flame. I think it should be more like, this is a warm place to be. This flame is actually really life-affirming and life-giving. And I think little kids really can pick up on that. Like Jenna said, kids are smarter than we often give them credit for. And kids can pick up on our sense of how we feel about it.
Yeah, and our kids are watching us. And so how we talk, how we act with our spouse really says a lot to them. There was a statistic that I've read a number of times, actually, that the average boy sees pornography around 8 years old. And that like terrified me. I thought, that is a loss of innocence. However, I think we preserve our children's innocence when we teach them about the beauty of sex and how it's a part of us, that Heavenly Father planted these desires in us for a really lovely reason, that we will connect with our spouse, that we'll build a strong relationship, that sex really is something that nurtures us and is creative. You know, all these beautiful things that you all just mentioned. And so when we talk about it that way, and our kids absorb that feeling and attitude about sex, then when someone exposes them or they stumble upon pornography, they're going to be so repulsed by it because they already have this sense of healthy attitudes towards sex. We've created this protective barrier between them and some of these negative attitudes they get inundated with.
I think that from both of what you have said, Rebecca and Shalom, that it's important to kind of address your own feelings about sex in this. If you're not comfortable with your own sexuality, like Rebecca had said, if you're uncomfortable saying the words, any of this, it's going to come across to the kids. And so I think a lot of times the first place parents need to go is to themselves to figure out how they feel and maybe do some self-confrontation and some work on themselves in order to really be able to model this well for their kids. And honestly, that's probably a whole conversation in and of itself. But I think that that's a really crucial piece of this.
Yeah, we're all vigorously nodding our heads. So maybe that needs to be a future podcast.
You know, that actually makes me think, I've got four boys and I feel like my husband and I tried to talk with them all pretty openly. And even if we didn't feel comfortable, fake like we were feeling comfortable, like we tried to really make it, this isn't bothering us. Why would it bother you that we're talking about it? But I noticed with my two younger ones, that they seem a lot more comfortable talking about sex. And I think it's because I've become so much more comfortable. And they know the moms at school researching sex. This isn't something that we're hiding. It's not something we're scared of. And I really notice in those two what a difference it makes in how they seem to feel about it versus my older two.
Yeah. And I think research bears that out, that parents who have frequent, comfortable conversations with their kids, those are the kids that are less at risk for risky sexual behavior. And we know if parents talk often and comfortably with kids, the children are more likely to accept and adopt the parents' values about sex. So it's not like, oh, if I talk about sex, I'm going to create this unnatural curiosity that my child never would have had. The truth is, our children are sexual beings, whether we acknowledge it or not. And if they don't get information from us, they're going to seek it from other sources. We know from research, the two sources they're most likely to use are peers and internet. The two worst sources they could ever go to, right? Because those aren't going to give them good information. So many reasons that we want to clean up our attitudes if that's an issue, and then present a really comfortable environment for our kids. I think our next podcast really ought to be about, what does that sex talk look like? How do we actually navigate that with our children? And then we can tackle, what does it look like to maintain this open conversation with our teenagers? And then maybe even, how do we prepare our young adults for marriage when they're actually going to start expressing their sexuality fully within a relationship?
You know, so much of what we've talked about today, talking about little children, it dawns on me that so much of this is a protection to them, to talk to them about sexuality and sex and their bodies and naming their body parts, calling them what they are, is a protection to them. It gives them the ability to communicate with us and ask questions that are clearer than if we hadn't been clear with them. And it lets them know where we have drawn our boundaries and why we've drawn them where we have, and that that's a joyful and freeing thing, that those boundaries are in place on purpose. And so I think verbalizing too to children, if a child comes to you with a question, I would do backflips. And in fact, I have said, I'm so glad you came to me. This is awesome. And then proceeded to answer the question so that they know that that makes me happy. That there's no question in their mind, you know, is mom uncomfortable? Is she weirded out? Should I be ashamed that I have a question? I think being just as explicit with your kids, as age appropriate as possible, but explicitly happy and joyful about sex as possible, then like Shalom said, that's when even little kids can start to understand when that line's been crossed. And then that's a protection to them ultimately, is they can start to discern for themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point. It reminds me of one other point that we should make with this age group. You know, here they're not really prepared to understand the details of sexual intercourse and a sexual relationship because their mind just isn't working that way yet. But they are curious about their body. And so this is a beautiful time for us to reinforce how positive we should feel about our bodies. And I remember in one seminar I was teaching, a mother came up to me afterwards, like she didn't want to ask this in front of the whole group. And she was kind of ashamed, but she said, you know, my 3-year-old boy, every time he takes a bath, he's playing with his penis. And I just feel like he's obsessed with sex. And I said, well, you know, it may be that he's just trying to figure out his body parts, because in the bathtub is the only time he sees his penis. Otherwise, it's covered up. And she says, well, it goes beyond that. He's even touching his anus. So I'm sure that there's something wrong going on in his head. And I said to her at the moment, and then we followed up weeks later, but I said, you know what? Probably your little boy is getting ready to potty train. And he has felt, he's starting to tune in to when he's going to have a bowel movement. And so he's touching himself because he's just trying to learn about his body. And she followed up with me a few weeks later and she said, sure enough, he was ready to potty train. And he was so aware of how his body was working, or he was starting to become aware, that he touched his penis because it was something he needed to learn about. He touched his anus because he felt that pressure of a bowel movement. And so I think too often we freak out about our children going through that natural process of learning about their body. And then we create this unhealthy attitude because we shame them by slapping their hand and saying, don't touch yourself, instead of saying, yeah, that's your penis. That's great. It's just like when my 3-year-old discovered her elbow. She had never realized she had an elbow until she was about 3. And she went around the house all day long saying, I have an elbow. I have an elbow. And showing us all her elbow because it was new to her. So it's no different when our daughters discover they have a vulva and a vagina and, you know, all their other parts, and boys do the same.
And I mean, that starts from very young. I'm just thinking about when you have a new little baby and you notice when they discover their tongue, all of a sudden they've got their tongue sticking out all the time, which is adorable. And then they discover their hands and they're watching their hands and they're sucking on their hands. And they're, you know, it's like all of a sudden they realize they've got hands, and then they discover their feet, and all of a sudden they're chewing on their feet all the time and things. It's a natural process to kind of discover body parts as they mature.
Yeah, and we would never shame them about discovering their hands, but somehow because we've become so shut down and ashamed about sex and our sexual being, we start to shame our kids even unknowingly about their own sexual body parts.
You know, and I think one of those unknowing moments can be even during a diaper change. As simple as this sounds, I think if we say, oh, gross, like if we're sicked out by changing a dirty diaper, I think what the child is experiencing is there's the part that's usually covered up by my diaper, which is my genitals. They don't think in those terms, but that's gross down there. That hidden part is gross. And so I think sometimes, like Amber mentioned, that might be one of the times to fake it. Just have a pleasant look on your face. I mean, we are communicating to our kids about their bodies and about the value of their bodies and the cleanliness levels of their bodies. And if we have a shocked or a disgusted look, I mean, sometimes you have to just give yourself a break. Sometimes I know it's almost impossible, but I think that that's maybe one of those little inadvertent times when we send young kids messages about their bodies.
Well, most times when, you know, you're changing a child's diaper, or especially bath time, that is actually a very valuable time to teach them, where it's just you and them. You can talk to them about their body and how wonderful it is. That's a time where they can explore their body. It's not in public. You can talk about genitals. You can use those terms and teach them. And you can teach them lessons like, we don't talk about our genitals in public. We don't show other people our genitals. And you can have those conversations very openly in a comfortable environment with your child where it's just you and them. I think that's a really positive place and an easy circumstance where you can talk about those things with your child.
Okay, one more story. When one of my daughters was really young and she had learned all the right terminology and she had just potty trained, and it was her dad's turn to take her into the bathroom when we were out in public. I think we were at McDonald's or something. And it was a busy men's bathroom and our little girl was in the stall using the bathroom, and she announces to her dad really loudly, "I have a vagina. You don't have a vagina. I have a..." Actually, she was saying gina because she couldn't even say vagina. So it was darling. But you know, my husband had to kind of do a little gut check because here he is in this very public place and she's talking with terminology that she was taught to use. So sometimes as parents, we have to realize it's going to take him a little while to learn when it's appropriate and then when it's not. And that might take them, you know, till they're 4 or 5 to understand the appropriateness of using this terminology. Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room. What about the poor parent who's listening to this and saying, "I didn't do any of that. I'm a loser parent now because I didn't teach my child the correct terminology, wasn't comfortable, and I'm still not comfortable." What's our advice to them?
It is never too late. Amber, go ahead.
Well, I was just actually having a conversation with my dad this week. He found something I wrote in high school about an experience with my grandpa being in the hospital. And he said, "Did you write that when you went to the hospital to visit your grandpa?" And I was like, "Honestly, I don't remember." And I just was saying to him, it's funny how much I don't actually remember from my childhood. And so I kind of take that as like what Rebecca said, it's never too late. Do I remember if my parents talked to me at age 5 about this? No, not really. That sets a foundation and it's really good if you can do it now, but I don't think you've broken anything if you haven't done it yet. What I remember now is more of the later years and even current years. If they were still continuing to have these conversations later into my life, I would be remembering those at this point.
It was really sweet. I was teaching a sex seminar back east, and I think this group was all women. And there was this mother who was probably in her mid-60s, early 70s, and her daughter who was in her 40s or 50s. And they were sitting together, and I was talking about talking to your children in all these different stages. And later, they told me they had this little conversation between the two of them, and the mother said, "Yeah, I never did that for you." And the daughter said to her mom, "Well, it's not too late." And I think that's really true. It's never too early to talk about this topic, and it's never too late. We can just tell our kids, even if they're teenagers, we can just say, "You know what? I wish I had have created a more comfortable environment in talking about sex. I'm going to repent. I'm going to do that now. Maybe it'll be awkward the first few times we do it, but I'm going to start." So if you didn't start when they were little, whatever stage you're at, it isn't too late. You can start up, even though it'll be a little awkward for everybody at first. The fact that your children know that you value this topic, they know that you correct whatever wasn't given to them, that you know it's a beautiful, important topic, that's going to say a lot to them. I think that as we go through the process and just gently talk to our children about our views of this beautiful element of who we are, they pick it up, they understand, and they embrace it. That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Sexual Mindfulness Project and subscribe to our website, shalomlevitt.com, to stay up to date with the latest information on sexual mindfulness. Thanks for listening.